Janmaksham te jabhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Duli dusharitangastvam Putra majanam avaha Janmaraksham te jabhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Vaishnavas Dule dusharitangastvam Putram ajanam avaha Danmaksham teja bhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Duli dushari tangastvam Putram arjanam avaha Janmaksham teja bhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Duli dushari tangastvam Putra majanam avaha Jabhavati Asuchi Dushari tangastam Janmaksham te jabhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Vaishnavis Duli dusari tangastvam Putra majanam avaha Janmaksham te jabhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Duli dushtari tangastvam Putra majanam avaha Janmaksham te jabhavati Viprebhyo dehika suchi Duli dusharita agyatvam. You have become covered with dust and sand all over your body. Putra, my dear son, majanam avaha. Now come here, take your bath and cleanse yourself. Janmaraksham, the auspicious star of your birth. Te, of you. Adya, today. Bhavati, it is. Viprebhya, unto the pure Brahmanas. Dehi, given charity. Ga, cows. Suchi, being purified. Translation. Mother Jasoda further told Krishna, my dear son, because of playing all day, your body has become covered with dust and sand. Therefore, come back, take your bath, and cleanse yourself. Today the moon is conjoined with the auspicious star of your birth. Therefore, be pure and give cows in charity to the Brahmanas. Purport. It is a custom of Vedic culture that whenever there is an auspicious ceremony, one should give valuable cows in charity to the Brahmanas. Therefore, Mother Jasoda requested Krishna, instead of being enthusiastic in playing, now please come and be enthusiastic in charity. Yajna dhana tapa karma na tri jam karyam eva tat. As advised in Bhagavad Gita 18.5, sacrifice, charity, and austerity should never be given up. yogyodhanam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Even if one is very much advanced in spiritual life, one should not give up these three duties. To observe one's birthday ceremony, one should do something in terms of one of these three items, yajna, dhana, or tapa, or all of them together. And I forgot. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nibhishesha Sunivari Prasthachirya Satayane Om Aginata Midandasya Ganangana Shavakya Chaksuram Nivatam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruvena Mahamukam Karati Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Gyat Kripa Tvam Aham Vande Shri Guru Dhanana Taranam Vanshakapatubyascha Kripasindhibyeva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, first I have to tell you that my brains are still in transit and I'm definitely somewhat disoriented, so please forgive me. I'll do my best to speak. First, just some clarification items. I was reading yesterday, looking at the pastime here and through the eyes of Kavi Kanapur and Jiva Goswami and others, to just kind of get an understanding, because this idea that Krishna was playing by the water when he was three, I found a little bit hard to process. So what I understood from that research is that actually Krishna and Balaram and the boys, they would regularly play in the center of the city or the town that they were living in, the village that they were living in, Vrindavan. No, it wasn't Vrindavan, actually. It was Mahavan. So they were living there, and the fear or the nervousness of Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj, because there had been so many other problems, and they were always afraid Krishna and Balaram would run off and get into some mischief. So they hired, or whatever hired means in that terminology, but they got some nurses to watch them. So the nurses were watching them, but Krishna and Balaram were watching the nurses. And so they were always very enthusiastic that as soon as the nurses were a little inattentive, then they would take off. They would split. And so in this particular time, they got out of the watchful eye of the nurses and they ran away. And the nurses were calling for them, and the more they could hear, the more they ran, because they wanted to go away from where the nurses could see them. And so they went away, and the nurses were calling and calling, and they couldn't find them, or at least they didn't get any response. So then they went to Mother Jasoda and Rohini, and what you see happening here is the result of that. So that gives us a little bit of a clarification in that they didn't just go off at the ripe old age of three or three and a half, but they were actually being watched and they escaped. So, and Mother Jasoda, she was called upon by Rohini, as is explained in previous classes, to bring Krishna for prasadam, or for bhoga, I guess, in Krishna's case, because it was mentioned that she had greater love for Krishna, which basically, in our understanding, means that her love for Krishna was, Mother Jasoda's love for Krishna was most free of any kind of personal aggrandizement, desire for any kind of recognition, or she didn't have any awe, she didn't have any fear. The only fear that Mother Jasoda had was fear for Krishna's welfare. So as Kunti comments in her prayers, that it's amazing how the person whom fear himself or death himself is afraid of, is afraid of Mother Jasoda. But even more than being afraid of Mother Jasoda, Jasoda is afraid for Krishna's welfare. So far from thinking for even a second that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so absorbed in that mood of being his mother, that she actually was very worried about her. And we'll see in the just a little ways from this pastime just coming up, they're going to move. All the cowherd men are going to come together under the direction of Upananda, and they're going to decide to move to Vrindavan. And the impetus for moving is that Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj, especially Mother Jasoda, is always in anxiety about Krishna's welfare. So many demons coming, so much problems, trees falling down, all kinds of bizarre things happening, and carts collapsing over him, and just different things. And Mother Jasoda is beside herself with anxiety for Krishna's welfare. So this is surely a great reverse, that she, not only is Krishna afraid of her, but she is afraid for Krishna. And then we look at the concept of love. I'd like to spend just a few minutes looking at the concept of love as given to us by Srila Prabhupada and as displayed in these pastimes by Mother Jasoda. Because Mother Jasoda's love, in some places, Prabhupada equates with the love of the gopis. It's just a different rasa, but there's still that tremendous self-sacrificing feeling of love. And that love in the material world is often said that the closest to that love, that selfless love, is the love of a mother for her child. And if we can get in touch with that a little bit, that concept, that idea that I'm willing to sacrifice everything, I'm willing to sacrifice my life, even for the welfare of another, for the welfare of my child, that feeling, that selfless, endless feeling of willing to do anything for the welfare of another is just a glimpse into the loving feelings that exist between especially Mother Jasoda and the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada says, and I'd like to read just a little quote, Srila Prabhupada says, devotional service to the Lord is very simple. One should always engage in the service of the Lord, should eat the remnants of foodstuffs to offer to the deity, smell the flowers, offer to the lotus feet of the Lord, see the places where the Lord had his transcendental pastimes, read of the different activities of the Lord and his reciprocation of love with his devotees, chant always the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and observe the fasting days commemorating the appearances and disappearances of the Lord and his devotees. By following such a process, one becomes completely detached from all material activities, which in turn allows us to become completely attached to Krishna. So here, Mother Jasoda gave a series of different reasons for Krishna to return home. One of them being that Nanda Maharaj was, as Jiva Goswami, in the translation that I looked at, is Nanda Maharaj is becoming famished, waiting for Krishna and Balaram to return so that he can eat, because he won't eat without them. So the feeling of respect we heard a little bit yesterday, that was a calling. Krishna and Balaram, come home now. Stop playing and allow your father to eat, because he won't eat with you. And then here we have this concept of charity, that Mother Jasoda actually, it wasn't Krishna's birthday. It wasn't Krishna's birthday. This was just something that Mother Jasoda said to Krishna in order to get him to come back home. So she said, you know, the moon and the star of your birth are coming together. Now you should come back and give in charity, because she knew that Krishna had a great affection for the brahmanas. And so perhaps the offering of charity, and she needed an excuse, so she said, well, there's the star arrangement of the moon and the stars, and if you come today, then it's a good day for giving charity, so come on, come home and get dressed and get cleaned up, get all this dirt and dust off your body, and just give charity to the brahmanas. And that way you'll evoke auspiciousness, and everything will be wonderful. So even she kind of told a white lie. So you can see that mood, you know, like a mother trying to give medicine to the child, trying to organize the child's life in such a way. Sometimes she has to say things which, you know, the child doesn't know exactly are true or false, but they're just designed to kind of pull the child along. And ultimately, that's what Mother Jasoda did. She grabbed Krishna and Balaram by the hands, and then she took them home. Because as she was giving them these little arguments, she was moving closer and closer. She started by calling them from far away, because she was afraid that if she called them too close, they'd run away. So she didn't want them to run away. So she was calling them from far and then gradually moving closer and closer and offering them one argument and after another until eventually she got close enough and she just took them by the hands and said, okay, come on, we're going home. So as we look at these pastimes like we've been reading, we see that Mother Jasoda was concerned for Krishna's welfare and his upbringing on many different levels. She was concerned to see that he ate enough, like we see here that he was eating. But this is not the only time. Once there was a time when Krishna said to Mother Jasoda, I want to go on a picnic with the boys. We want to eat in the forest. And Mother Jasoda's reaction at first was, no way. No, 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 no. But Krishna convinced her. He was determined, and he usually wins. He almost always wins. So he convinced her to prepare many nice things. But it's described that Mother Jasoda was so in anxiety every day when Krishna would go out to tend the calves and play with his friends or disappear from her for a moment, she would keep an eye on him no matter what. And even when he was going out legitimately to take care of the calves, she would follow him to the edge of the forest and keep asking him, are you sure you have enough food? Are you sure you have enough? Maybe I should get you a few more sweets. Maybe I should get you another something, because I'm not sure you have enough. You know, you're going to share it with the boys and then you're going to be sick. You're not going to get enough nourishment. And she would remind him again and again, and the boys in the back would be going, come on, Krishna, let's go, let's go. And he would be like, my mother, she hasn't let me go yet. And so there was this constant rasa between the boys who wanted Krishna to come out and play and Krishna's responsibility to his parents. So here we see Mother Jasoda also again very concerned that Krishna be not only fed, that was one thing, but also that he be act properly. Huh? In the Damodar Leela, we see the beginning of the problem, the leading up to the Damodar Leela, was that Krishna was stealing. What is this stealing business? Stealing isn't a very nice thing. So Mother Jasoda eventually, after listening many times to the complaints of the gopis and feeling that, okay, I have to do something. I have to do something. He's such a rascal. He's always doing such mischief. And then finally breaking everything and feeding everything to the monkeys. She thought, okay, I just have to punish him. So first she came at him with a stick. But then she saw he was so scared. She thought, well, I don't want to scare him to death, so I'll throw the stick away. But she felt the necessity of binding him up to a grinding mortar. He needs some time out. He needs to be punished. So Mother Jasoda was concerned not only that he ate properly, but also that he developed good character. Huh? She was very concerned that he'd become a nice, responsible, mature member of the cowherd community, and that he not act mischievously. So then, aside from that, she was also concerned that he would be a religious person, even though he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that didn't occur to her. She wanted him to be a religious person. Here she wanted him to give charity to the brahmanas. She wanted him to treat his father properly with proper respect. So she felt a very great need to train him in every possible way, take care of him materially, take care of him spiritually, take care of him emotionally, take care of all his needs. And this is the job of the mother. So we can understand by Mother Jasoda's example that the mother plays a very, very important part in society. Sometimes in our society, motherhood gets a bad rap. And we minimize the importance of mother. Prabhupada, when he said that men should call women mother, he didn't mean that lightly, like some kind of expression. Where I come from in New York, calling someone mother is not a very nice expression. And so, but Prabhupada meant it with the utmost respect, that someone who is the mother has the future development of society in her hands. Because if I'm training the children who are the future of the movement or the future of society, then I have a very big responsibility. I have a very big responsibility to see that my children are healthy, to see that they're spiritually getting the training that they need, to see that they're that they're respectful, that they behave properly in the temple, that they worship the deity properly, that they grow up well-rounded people who have the ability to know how to act appropriately in society. Another interesting angle that I got from reading these pastimes is that prasadam, the mother and prasadam, the link between the mother and the feeding of people, offering food, is a very, very important aspect of Vedic culture. This idea of receiving guests by offering them prasadam, you see it when you go to India. I remember the first time I went to India was in 1974, and we had a bit of a problem with some money. That money was supposed to be sent to us, maybe I've told you before, but that money never was received. And we were originally told that we should give the money to somebody in Canada, and they were going to arrange for us to pick it up in Delhi. So we had never been to India before, and every day we were having to go into old Delhi and go to this person's house in order to check to see if money had come. Phones weren't weren't really in existence, and certainly not cell phones weren't in existence, and phoning was more complicated than going, actually. So it was easier to actually get in a, in a scooter and just go there than it was to make a phone call. Confirmed. So phones complicate your life. So we were walking down the street in this one street in Old Delhi, and we didn't know where this person lived. Where are the numbers? Where are the street signs? It's not like America that, you know, you just go to the corner of such and such and such and such and turn right and there it is. It was very confusing. So we were walking around trying to figure out where this house was, and we were dressed in devotional clothes, and all of a sudden some people called us in to their house, and they just came out on the street and said, come, come. So we assumed that it was them, that it was these people that we were looking for, because why else would they call us into their house, right? But we went in, and they gave us gifts. They gave us towels, I remember, little washcloth things. They gave us a couple of gifts, and then they fed us. They fed us rabri, and they fed us milk with pistachio nuts in it. And I still remember, it was 1974. As it turned out, they hardly spoke any English, and they were not the people that we were looking for. They were just people, and they just saw us walking, and they thought it was interesting that we were, you know, white-bodied bhaktas. We had a hand-written bead bag, Kunti Mala on, tilak, and we're walking down the street, and they thought, let me do some service to them. So they fed us, and they offered us gifts, and they welcomed us into their house. Now you knock on a house door, even maybe you're supposed to go there. I was just in Slovenia. Is a very, if anyone even knows where Slovenia is, besides Shri, who's from Slovenia, it's a very small country. It's very beautiful, surrounded by mountains and really gorgeous place. But still, I stayed in an apartment of one or two devotee Matajis who was right down the block from the temple. And you had to punch in a number to get in and a different number to get out. So if you assuming you had the key or somebody let you in, somehow you got to the door and you got in but then you couldn't get out, right? Unless you knew the numbers, you couldn't get out. So there's an interesting security measure. Sankirtan devotee, you get stuck in there, you can't get out. But now, you know, you go and you knock on a door and that you hear all the different locks being open, the deadbolt, the sliding chain, and then they look at you through a little hole and they say, oh, who's there and what do you want? But in this particular case, these people actually invited us into their house and fed us and gave us gifts, and they didn't know who we were from Adam. And they didn't even know when we asked them who we were looking for, they didn't know who those people were at all. They had no clue. They just said, well, you can keep looking. So we we kept looking. So this is a culture that hardly even exists now in India. Now even in India, except in the more rural areas, this concept of being open and inviting people and taking care of sadhus and everything, it's manifest much less in the more modern manifestation of India as we see it today. But again, coming back to this concept of prasadam, that in Vedic culture, love is transmitted through food, through prasadam, through the preparation of food. One devotee shows their love for another by exchanging, well, we read in the Upadeksamrita three different kinds of things, but I'm going to focus on prasadam for the next few minutes because I like to eat. And Prabhupada liked prasadam. When he was sitting on the Vyasasana and during the Guru Puja, they were chanting the Guru Vashtakam prayers. When they got to the fourth of the Guru Vashtakam prayers, which was Chatur Bihachri Bhagavat Prasad, he said, this is the best one. So it's actually confirmed by Srila Prabhupada that prasadam is very, very important. And putting love into prasadam, eating prasadam prepared with love, is very important to one's spiritual welfare. Krishna also prefers to eat prasadam, which is prepared with love. And the more love in it, the better it is for him. Because even a banana peel, right, with Vidura, Krishna ate banana peels. He didn't even eat the bananas. He just ate the banana peels because it was so offered with so much love that Krishna couldn't resist. And Vidura was and his wife were just meditating so much on Krishna that they didn't even notice that they were peeling the banana and throwing away the banana and just offering Krishna the peel. And so Krishna also being absorbed in looking at them, he ate those peels with great relish. So it's not even necessarily that the prasadam is opulent, that there's a lot of ghee, that there's, you know, very fantastic ingredients, although all those things are nice. But just that love, that affection that's offered to Krishna, he receives that. And when he receives that, he's overwhelmed with reciprocation, with a desire to reciprocate with his devotees. We see that with Sudama Vipra also, right? Sudama Vipra came not with a big, you know, it wasn't Raghavajali. He didn't have lots and lots of different preparations that he'd been preparing for years. He just got some chipped rice, and he had to beg that from the other residents in the village because he didn't really have anything. He was so poor that he didn't have anything. But he came into Krishna's presence with so much love and so much affection that Krishna took that rice from him and snatched just one piece and ate it. And he was about to take more, and Rukmini said, wait a minute, don't, you know, I'm already so obligated to this man to reciprocate with him because you ate that one grain of rice. Don't eat anything else. So that sense of offering with love, offering things with love is so very important. There's so many other examples. The wives of the Brahmins, and Sabari Muni is another one in Ram Leela. She was feeding Krishna pilu fruits. And she had waited for Ram and Lakshman to come to her ashram for many, many years because she had been told that they were going to come. So every day she would prepare a welcome mat for them out of flowers. And she would wait and wait and wait year after year for them to finally arrive. And when they finally arrived, she was a very old woman. She could hardly see and she could hardly walk. And yet she was so overwhelmed with loving affection for them that through her tears, she was just gazing at the form of Ram. And she sat them down and all she had was these fruits. So sometimes their fruits are not, if you know, even here, we find it hard to know what a fruit's going to be like when we get it home, right? Sometimes it's dry and tasteless, and sometimes it's bitter. So we can't tell by the outside, especially now because they doctor it up so that it looks really beautiful, and then you get it home and it's useless. So these pilu fruits, sometimes they were not quite right inside, so she was biting them to see which ones were good and which ones were bad. And when the fruit was really sweet, then she would take the bitten fruit, and she would offer it to Ram, and Ram would eat it with great relish. Even Lakshman tried to stop him. What are you doing? You're eating the remnants of this woman. What's wrong with you? And so he continued to eat with great relish those pilu fruits. So we have just many examples that it's really not about what we offer, but about how we offer. And specifically, a mother distributes her love for her children through the cooking. You know, you've heard kids say, you know, my mom's the best cook. No, my mom's the best cook. Well, you haven't tasted my mom's whatever. So mothers give their love through their reciprocation in the form of prasadam. But now, very often we buy packaged things and we don't really get into cooking very much, right? We go to the restaurant and we don't know who's cooking. Maybe we don't know who's cooking. And and what conditions they're cooking in or anything. The consciousness certainly isn't focused on developing a loving relationship with each customer that walks in. So we should be very careful not to lose this culture, because this aspect of our culture and the loving relationship of a mother with the child specifically, or with the whole family actually, specifically through giving her love in the form of the exchange of prasadam, is a very, very important exchange of charity, tapa, and all these things that we shouldn't give up. It's a sacrifice for a woman. Prabhupada gives the example that a woman will cook even the heat of the summer. She'll still go in the kitchen and she'll still prepare prasadam. We go through great pains trying to make nice offerings for the deities. We get the best ingredients. We try to cook for our families with love and devotion. So in that way, we should maintain this standard that Krishna wanted, that we offer this sacrifice to Krishna with love, because with love, Krishna accepts our offering. So I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Hare Krishna. Yes, Divyanga Prabhu.
I remember Prabhupada made a statement that child worship is more important than deity worship, because in the instance this devotee was doing her seva puja to the deity and had a baby and was like, oh, this baby's, you know, getting into my service. And she wrote Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, child worship is more important than deity worship. Mm-hmm. And he said that these children have been given to us, and it's our duty to get them out of the material world, and it's mm-hmm. our service to take care of them. Just to make it really clear, Prabhupada made that statement. Uh-huh. So motherly, because it is, you know, people always ask, well, what's your career? What do you do? And if someone says, oh, I'm a mother, I stay at home mother, they're like, loser. You know what I mean? It's completely backwards, like everything else. But it's such an important service, you know, to have the kid, you know, because a lot of people farm out their kids, you know, to daycare or whatever. And it's just, like you said, it's different. You don't know. Just like you said, if you go to eat something, you don't know who cooked it. You don't know what consciousness they're in. Well, you put your kids in somebody else's, you know, care. So it's just, I like it that you made that point about how important it is for mothers to take care of their children.
Yeah, or to see that they're taken care of. You see that Mother Jasoda, she even got nurses to take care of her children, or Krishna and Balaram. But they were, you know, they were mothers also. They were gopis, elderly gopis, and so they also had that loving affection for Krishna. Everybody loved Krishna. So we should remember that loving mood. It's very, very important. Very important. Stiti Muni, yes,
yeah,
I see you
kind of addressed my question already.
Okay.
Because I was going to say, seemed like Prabhupada did promote daycare, because uh-huh. there are letters where he's saying the other mothers could watch children uh-huh. while the biological mother was doing service. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's more of a sense of a community of mothers.
Right, and that sense of community is also very important, that Krishna was raised in the village, and everyone in the village loved Krishna. Everyone in the village loved all the children and worked together to raise the children. So even in the material world, there's an expression, it takes a village to raise a child. Just recently, I was talking to some devotee, and they were saying how, you know, in the end, only myself and somebody else will do X, Y, Z. But really, none of us do anything ourselves. None of us do anything ourselves. We could work to do something and be very powerful at doing it, but one devotee doing the wrong thing or one devotee causing some disturbance, and everything gets disturbed. So it really, it's a collective effort, whatever we do. And every one of us is dependent on everyone else. And not only in this community, but in the whole movement. That I just was at a, I was just at a one of these summer camps, yatras, whatever, in Slovenia, and the focus of that was devotee care and cooperation. And so for 3 days, I was lecturing on cooperation and giving ideas how to increase the one's ability to understand, to walk a mile in another person's shoes. That's what, you know, we were talking about. And I read many, many quotes from Srila Prabhupada on cooperation. And really, if we think that we're doing it, or we're doing it alone, or no one's helping us, we're really in big maha-moha. Because really, every one of us, if someone makes a foolish error and there's bad publicity, then you may be working like a dog to raise money or to raise everything, but then the whole thing falls like a deck of cards and we have to try for years to pick it up again. So each one of us is contributing. Each one of us is making connections, friends, bringing people in, receiving them, taking care of them, keeping the place clean, doing the garden. All of us are part of the machine that keeps the wheels turning. Yes.
And I just want to add a little more pastime on when Krishna was going to the forest every day. Srila Jiva Goswami also explains that when he would go, and Mother Yashoda would be going, as you describe, asking him if he wants more meals or whatever, then he would hold her hand and bring her back to the gate. Then he would go again, and his friends would say, okay, you know, now we can go. And next thing, she would immediately forget all that happened, and she would run behind him again. And he would have to do that every day 3 or 4 times. Then sometimes he would finally go and call Mother Rohini, okay, please take her in, that I'll be okay.
Yeah. And not only was she worried about his eating, she was also worried about his feet. She was trying to get him shoes. There's one wonderful story about she told Krishna she wanted him to wear shoes. And he said, well, I can't wear shoes because my cows don't have shoes. And unless you were willing to put shoes on all my cows, which is a lot of shoes because cows have 4 feet and there were 900,000 of them. So unless you're willing to put shoes on my cows, then I'm not going to wear shoes because I can't wear shoes if they're not wearing shoes. So there was all this, you know, so-called tension, this loving exchange, which makes it so easy to love Krishna, or easier anyway, to love Krishna.
I was also thinking too that when we used to do Sankirtan in Guyana back in the late 80s and early 90s, the situation was similar like how you said in India, people would just call you from the streets. So they would call us and give us all milk and fruit and offer us to eat whatever. Yeah. And sometimes when we were finished, because we in those days we were in a temple, our program was from 3 o'clock in the morning to 10 or 11 at night. So they would see us looking tired. They would say, okay, when you finish, you can have this bed to sleep on or a hammock. And we would go and we would have a really good snap sometimes. Next thing, when we wake up, we would see like a whole big bag of fruits or vegetables or something to take back to the temple. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, they don't have to know us, but that was just the culture.
Yeah, actually, when I was in Surat, I was taken by somebody I didn't even know. I went to a shop to get something for the deities, and the guy in the shop, he suggested that there was a better place that I go. So he took me out into the village, and they actually swung me on a swing. They had a swing on the porch, and they sat me on the swing, and they swung me on the swing and fanned me. It's quite interesting what how different the culture is. What would you do now if someone offered to swing you on a swing, right? Anyway, I should end. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.